Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2009 Home Education Conference held at Southern Virginia University.
I'm supposed to say, hello, my name is Brett DeGraff, and this, what is this class? What if? Okay, good enough. Let me just see this for a second. We have somebody still coming in. How many of you are Liahona or have taken Liahona classes before? Some not? Okay, a few of us have. Some of you may have seen some of the things we're going to be talking about today, so if you have, just pretend that you haven't. Pretend that you're one of my students and that you're reviewing for a test and that this is all first time. You've never seen it or heard it before. That's a depressing thing. I don't know if you've ever taught classes before. That's a depressing thing about being a teacher is when you do a review, and you're doing the review with your students, and they're looking at you like it's the first time they've ever heard any of the material that you're covering. All right, if everybody would do me a favor, open up to Mosiah chapter 24, verses 3 through 7. Now, I'm going to use this little thing that Sister Ward, Kathy Ward, has given me. It's one of these rich people things, or either I'm just really, really antiquated, and I have no clue what this is, but it's a scripture. What is this, Kathy? It's scriptures on what? Oh, it's an iPhone? Well, aren't we special? It's kind of cool. Okay, everybody would turn. I will get serious in a minute, I promise. Everybody turn to Mosiah chapter 24, verses 3 through 7. I don't know if I can read this. Okay, let me go with it. Let me read it with me, if you would, please. And now the name of the king of the Lamanites was Laman, being called after the name of his father, and therefore he was called King Laman. That makes sense. And he was king over a numerous people. This better work, Kathy, because if I can't scroll this thing up. And he appointed teachers of the brethren of Amulon in every land which was possessed by his people. And thus the language of Nephi began to be taught among all the people of the Lamanites. And they were a people friendly one with another. So basically what you have here, some teachers being appointed to go out and teach in the land, and they were friendly people, which is nice. Nevertheless, they knew not God. And then this is the interesting one. Move on just a little bit, let me finish. This is the problem. Neither did the brethren of Amulon teach them anything. And this is the key here. Concerning the Lord their God, neither the law of Moses, nor did they teach them the words of Abinadi. So what they taught them, they were appointed to teach, but they didn't teach them three things. And this sounds like so much that we do today in our educational system. They couldn't teach them the law of Moses, they couldn't teach them the word of God, and they couldn't teach them the word of Abinadi. So they couldn't teach them the word of God, they couldn't teach them the law of God, and they couldn't include the word of the prophets in with anything that they taught them. What happens when you do that in an educational system, or what happens when you do that in the education of your children? Verse 6 tells you what happens when you, or what they did let them teach. Sounds like a few English classes I've been in before. It says, but they taught them that they should keep their record and that they might write one to another. So you can't teach about the word of God, you can't teach about the law of God, you can't teach about the word of the prophets, but you can write to each other and be nice to each other. But just don't mention God in anything that you are teaching your children. And what happens in verse 7, and thus the Lamanites begin to increase in riches, so you can get rich, and begin to trade one with another, and wax great, and begin to be a cunning and a wise and whatever, and it just clomped out on me. Anyway, they ended up being a very rich people and a very cunning people and a very wise people in the ways of the world, but not in the ways of God, and they ended up, their civilization was destroyed. Mosiah chapter 24, verses 3 through 7. And unfortunately, I'm afraid this is what we do in our history classes when we teach history. We teach the secular things, and we're nice to each other, and we talk about the things that happen, but we don't include the word of God, we don't include the law of the prophets, and we don't include the word of the prophets. So what we're going to talk about today is how you teach history, and especially world history. It can be boring. It can be dry. You're talking about some things that usually most of us, if you were like I was when I was in high school, I could tell where we had finished the previous day from where the drool marks were in my history book. I could close the book when I was done, and the very next day I could open it up. That's where the Ripley drool marks were because I'd gone to sleep. I don't know if you're droolers when you sleep. This ought to breed confidence in you. I flunked civics and history when I was in high school. My history and civics teacher was Mr. Mitchell. He also taught football, and he also taught the driver's ed class. That sounds familiar to some of you? And I remember I knew the back of his head really well because that's what we saw all the time, was the back of his head as he wrote. We didn't see him very often frontwards, and if we did, he was simply reading something to us. So what we're going to talk about today is how you teach world history or American history or history in general. It doesn't have to be any specific. And we're going to, if you write one word down, if you're going to remember anything today, write the word bridges down. I'm going to talk about bridges today. We're going to talk about the what ifs. And if some of you, like Kathy Ward, were at Liahona graduation a week or so ago, we talked about bridges and we're going to do it today. This is what World History Prentice Hall says about the Spanish Armada. Anybody know what the Spanish Armada was? Obviously, it was something to do with Spain. They said this. That's why I teach history. I'm good on those things. If we can come close to two quarters, this is the quotation of one of the commanders there. He said, "If we can come close to quarters, Spanish valor and Spanish steel will make our victory certain." Spaniards are like that. Too much testosterone. Okay, if we can get close to them, we can beat them. But then the textbook goes on to say this. The strange freak of weather, however, favored the other side. If you remember this in the Spanish Armada, we're going to talk about this in a second. Huge storm came in and blew the Spanish Armada aside. So here's the Spanish admiral saying, if we can just get close to him, we can beat him. But the textbook says, there was a strange freak of weather. Can't be God, because we can't include the word of God, the word of the prophets, or the law of God. So we've got to say something else. Say something nice. I don't know if freak of weather is nice. But say something that's non-religious. Make it secular. Give it some type of an explanation. All right. This is what we've been doing in history. We've been teaching or giving our children fish or stones when we should be giving them fish. Feed them. If a child asks you to feed them, you don't give your children stones, do you? You give them fish. You give them something that will nourish them. That's what we're going to try to do today. Now, did history, and this is the main thing that I think you need to remember when we're talking about world history, it didn't happen by accident. It's not by chance. It's not by some freak of nature, the weather. Brother McConkie said, when the real history, is that showing up there? Okay, I just wonder if maybe you were looking at a blank screen up there. When the real history of the world is written, it will show God's dealings with men and the place the gospel has played in the rise and fall of nations. Didn't happen by chance. It's not an accident. Harold B. Lee, our Father in heaven governs the affairs of men by placing specific, and this is important, not only for history, but for your children as you teach them too. Because you have to understand, if they grasp the concept that certain people were placed here at certain times for a certain reason, and you can show that to them, then they will eventually understand that they too are here for a specific purpose at a specific time for a specific reason. President Lee said, our Father in heaven governs the affairs of men by placing specific individuals upon the earth to lead at specific times and then inspiring and directing them. And finally, President Benson said, the characters in the drama had been held in reserve to come at appropriate times and intervals to influence the course of events in history. And I can probably show you 30 screens here. And what is it showing you? History doesn't happen by chance. History is not an accident. How many times do we look at history and say, that was lucky that happened, that was fortuitous that happened, good thing that freak of nature happened. But how many times do we say, ah, there's the hand of our Father in heaven. There is the hand of God. Do we teach our children this in world history? Or do we simply tell them that it was fortuitous, they were lucky, or thank heavens something happened? Because what we're going to see today is that every single time that you see great nations fall and weak nations rise, you can trace it back to the hand of God. Every single time. And why do they need to see that? You can teach them history, and if you're doing an LDS version of history, as it's called, and simply include a scripture. You can teach history and include simply some words of some of the prophets. That's fine. You're giving them a fish. But if you want to teach them how to fish, you have to teach them to recognize the hand of God in history for themselves. So they start looking for it. They start seeing it. And when they start seeing that for themselves in history, eventually they'll see it in their own lives. And yeah, you want to teach them history, but maybe just as much or more important is you want to teach them the value of themselves. And you know what? God does know what you're doing, and he does know your value. All right, here's the history. Who? King Philip of Spain. I'm going to give you a real brief history lesson here. King Philip of Spain. Queen Elizabeth of England. This is 1588. Yes, and Philip only has one L. My wife was chastising me, but it does only have one L. Why did King Philip send the armada? Three real quick reasons. He wanted England to be a Catholic country. And I'm only giving you this so that we can make these bridges. You can see how you spot the hand of God. Second, he was angry at the execution of Mary, Queen of Scots. She was Catholic. And three, Elizabeth determined to keep England a Protestant nation. Philip was of Spain. He was Catholic. Philip believed that it was his duty as a Catholic monarch to return England to the Catholic faith. Catholics across Europe believed that Elizabeth had no right to the throne of England. I won't use the word that they use for her. We'll be nice. Philip went to the Pope and was given the Pope's promise that he would support Philip if he invaded England. Cool. You got the Pope on your side, the most powerful man in the world. The Pope also promised that Philip would be allowed to choose England's next ruler. I'd go to England too if I could do that. So, here you've got Philip. He's Catholic in Spain. You've got Elizabeth. She's Protestant in England. Pope has given basically Philip free hand. You win, you beat them, you call the shots. So what does he do? But he sends his armada. In 1560, Elizabeth kind of irritated him a little bit when she helped the Netherlands again in a revolt against Spain. This is something important to remember too, because when you're thinking and gathering all the information, when you're teaching your children, as you go through and you get information, you get the historical facts, you have to have that before you can do this little connection we're going to do here. Four of the five great seafaring nations of the world, Spain, France, Portugal, and Italy, were Catholic. Okay, we're talking 1588 here. Think now. Does that portend any possible problems for America? And believe me, please understand, this is not a knock on the Catholic faith. It's just history as it was at the time. Any problem with four of the five greatest seafaring nations in the world, exploring nations in the world, being Catholic? Yeah, if there's no Protestant nation, there was only one Protestant exploring seafaring nation at the time, and that was England. If England falls to Catholicism, what happens to the Americas? Who settles America? What government is brought over with it? What values and principles are brought over? Are they Puritan? What are those Puritan principles of self-determination, of liberty and freedom? Or are they those of, at that particular time at least, Catholicism? Everything is mandated from the top down. If you want to see what happens to a country when they are settled and controlled by Catholicism, look at Massachusetts and look at Mexico, settled basically the same time. What do you have in Massachusetts? A bunch of rowdy, hot-headed people, right? Well, look at the Adamses anyway. And then what do you have in Mexico at the same time? It's interesting if you compare it. And why? Because you had the principles of Catholicism brought to Mexico, and you had the principles of Puritanism or Protestantism brought to Massachusetts and to America. All right. If the Spanish Armada wins, all the great exploring and seafaring nations are Catholic. This was not just a war for Europe. This was a war for the restoration of the gospel and ownership of America. Now, how many times do we look at history that way? How many times do you look at the Spanish Armada, which could really bore you to death if you're a student? It really seriously is like the youth class I'm giving tomorrow, I guess it is. It's almost like eating dirt. It's like, I'd rather eat dirt than have to talk about the Spanish Armada. Why? Because it's dry and boring. No, it's not. It's fascinating. And we're going to see a movie clip here in just a second. What were the odds? And if you have boys, show them the odds. They love the underdog. Military thing. Spain had 55,000 troops and 200 ships. England had 16,000 troops and 100 ships. Not looking good for England. But they had something called the Protestant wind. And we'll talk about that in just a second. I want you to, before we see this clip, I'd like you to read this one last comment by Elder McConkie. He said, before the gospel could shine forth, a flickering flame of religious and political freedom had to commence somewhere. Heaven determined that it begin in England. So this is what you have. You have two nations vying for power. Not really. England wasn't even a power at this time. It was fourth or fifth in line. But you have Spain that's decided, you know what, we want this country. But in looking in future terms, if Spain defeats England, the principles of Puritanism die. Exploration into the Americas is all done by Catholic countries. But you have something when they get ready for this battle that is called the Protestant wind. Let me set this up very quickly while I'm doing this. What you have in 1588 is the Spaniards that come out with their 200 or so ships. They make a crescent that extends for 7 miles across the English Channel, shaped kind of like this. They have these huge Spanish galleons. Coming into it are the English ships, smaller, less armed, nowhere near the firepower that the Spaniards have, and the Spaniards are trying to pull them into the middle of it so they can blow them to pieces. Well, something happens. As they are in that crescent trying to lull the English in, the English come up with an idea called a fire ship. Basically, they took 8 different ships and they loaded them with gunpowder and they loaded them with tar and they set them on fire and they ran them into, or set them on course to run into the Spanish galleons there, to the ships. Something came up that kind of helped them a little bit out of nowhere. It was a northerly wind or a southerly wind that blew from the south and blew north. And at the very moment when they set these English fire ships on fire, that wind started to blow harder and harder and harder. And it blew those fire ships so fast that it caught the Spaniards off guard. And they were trying to pull up their anchors before those fire ships hit them. Because if they hit, it would not just blow up one of the Spanish ships, it would blow up 5 or 6 or 7. And they couldn't get their anchors up quick enough. So they had to cut their anchors. And they did that. Some of the fire ships hit, but the majority of the Spaniards got away. They got away and the wind blew them northward. Northward, several miles, number of miles actually, they reshaped again in a crescent formation. And when they did that, here came the English again. And guess what happened again? That wind came up again out of nowhere at the very moment when the English were getting ready to strike. Well, you have a problem if you have a huge ship with huge sails and no anchor. What happens when that wind starts to blow hard? You can't control your ship. And it literally blew the Spaniard galleons all the way up the English Channel, up the coast of Scotland. It blew them into the seashore. It wiped out all but 50 of the 200 Spanish ships. This accidental, freakish wind took care of the Spanish Armada. I want you to see this clip now with that understanding. And let's watch this real fast, like here. This is Queen Elizabeth that you will see here. Do we have sound? Do you have sound there? Can we cut that light by chance? No, just that one. Thank you. So these are the Spaniards. The wind has just come up. They're in their crescent, remember. So, getting these fire ships ready to send into the middle of the Spanish Armada. Only one problem with that, you sent the ship in, you better jump at the right time, because that ship was going to blow up and there wouldn't be much of you left. Thank you. Okay, this is where the wind all of a sudden picks up big time. Brings the fire ships in more quickly than what they expect. This is Sir Francis Drake, by the way. So when you're teaching your children about this armada, do you teach it was very fortuitous, they were lucky that this wind came up at the right time and exactly when it needed to? Do you recognize what's happening here? This is not by accident. As I mentioned, the English and the Spaniards both call this wind the Protestant wind because of what it did. Kids in class like this part, especially the guys. This is the head of the Spanish fleet. Elizabeth, even in her own memoirs, talks about how she realized at a certain moment this wind had come up out of nowhere. And as she is camped out above the cliffs that look down where the armada is, she realizes something has happened, something unexpected. If the Queen of England in 1588 recognizes God's hand, why don't we? England should not have won this battle. This was going to the Spaniards. It was a done deal. How did it happen? Very simple. God stepped in and caused it to happen. And at the end, you'll see the words of the head of the Spanish fleet. Even he recognized what had happened. And what you have to keep in mind, you have to know your history when you're teaching this. What happens if Spain wins? What happens to the Americas? What about the principles of freedom and liberty? Puritan principles. How do they get here? Who brings them here? If there's no country to bring them to America, because they're all Catholic countries. Yeah, guys love that too. These are the words of the head of the Spanish fleet. The most powerful country in the world, with by far and away the most powerful navy in the world, goes down to defeat at a country who is probably sixth or seventh in the world in power, crushed by them. How does it happen? Okay, if I could have somebody do this light for me here, we're ready to just needs to be this one, that's great. Okay. So how does it happen? And what do you do with this then? Yes. It is Elizabeth with, what's her name? Yeah. What is it? The Golden Age, that's correct. And I edited some things out. You need to be aware of, it's mostly gore, just some arms falling off and things that happens when ships get blown up. Okay, this is the question that you must answer. Whenever, as I mentioned before, you see great nations rise or small nations defeat the powerful with no seeming reason, you have to ask this question here. What if? And this is the point of this today. What if Spain had won? What if Spain had won that battle? We'd have no King James Bible. We'd have no Jamestown, that's for sure. What if England becomes Catholic? Ask what if every time you see this happen. Here's the what ifs. Now, I'm going to fly through this, but this is the main thing that you need to learn to do if you're teaching history to your children. Ask what if. Teach them the history. Teach them the history of the Armada, how many ships and who was doing what and where and what was going on in the world. But then ask what if. What if it goes the other way? What if Spain wins the battle? The Puritans can't return to England, that's for sure. They're in the Netherlands. Why can't they return to England? England is now Catholic. And if the Puritans can't return to England, here's your bridge, as I call them, your connection. If the Puritans cannot return to England, there's no Mayflower. So what happens? What if there's no Mayflower? If there's no Mayflower, there's no Mayflower Compact. There's your bridge. But to what? If there's no Mayflower Compact, there's no Puritan principles of self-government. If there are no Puritan principles of self-government, there's no passion for liberty, for freedom, for independence. That burning that caused them to rise eventually against whoever their political masters happen to be. What's the bridge? What does that mean? That means you have no Washingtons, no Jeffersons, and no Madisons. They're not here. If you don't have that desire, that passion for liberty, for independence, for freedom, where are these men? And if you don't have these men, you don't have an American Revolution. And what that bridges to? If there's no American Revolution, there's no American Constitution. And if there's no Constitution, there are no rights and liberties. And what does that bridge us over to? There's no restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is where you have to take it to. Ask what if in anything that you teach your children in history. Let me give you for instance, and we'll do it maybe in just a minute if we have time. Martin Luther. There he stood before the Diet of Worms. They had all of his works laid out in front of him. They gave him that moment to recant, to take back what he had written. He asked for 24 hours to think it over. Why did he want 24 hours? Well, unless you really, really enjoy burning at the stake, which was were the consequences of the time, then you want to think about it a little bit. He came back at the end of 24 hours, and there he stood in front of priests and cardinals and politicians and kings and princes. And he stood there, one lone man. And they said, "Will you recant?" And he said, "I cannot, I will not. Here I stand, I can do no other, God help me." So what? If you teach your children that point in American or in world history, you are leaving so much out. What question do you have to answer for your children? What if? What if Martin Luther had recanted there at the Diet of Worms in the early 1500s? What if he had said, "Okay, I'll take it back"? If Martin Luther recants at the Diet of Worms in 1529, now think about the time here. You have to ask what if. If he does, there is no Protestant movement. It kills it basically right there. If it kills the Protestant Revolution there in 1529, there is no Henry VIII's break from the Catholic Church some 18, 19, 20 years later. If there's no King Henry VIII's break from the Catholic Church, There's no small group of people that are dissatisfied with even that break called Puritans. And if there are no Puritans that escape and go to the Netherlands and try to get out of the way of all the persecution they're going to, then there is no Mayflower again. And if there's no Mayflower again, there's no Mayflower Compact again. And if there's no Mayflower Compact, there's no Puritans of independence and freedom. And if there's no principles of independence and freedom, there is no American Constitution. And if there's no American Constitution, there's no restoration of the gospel. That is the question we have to ask on every single subject that we talk about when it comes to world history. Ask what if. Okay, how many of you have heard of Joan of Arc before? All right. What have you taught? Just give me some input. What have you taught about Joan of Arc? When you've taught your children or when you've learned about Joan of Arc, what have you taught? What have you taught? Yes. Okay, listening to the Spirit. Joan listened to the voices, correct? And we don't know exactly what those voices were. I can tell you right now that Elder Worthlin said that she was guided by the light of Christ. Okay, good. What else have you taught when you've taught Joan of Arc? Yes. Okay. The government did use the church for whatever purposes that it deemed necessary. But wait a minute. What did you teach Joan of Arc about Joan of Arc when it came to the restoration of the gospel? Because, brothers and sisters, this is the key thing to remember here. Elder Talmage says us that everything that happened after the apostasy led up to the restoration of the gospel. Now, step back a minute and think about that statement one more time. Everything that happened post-apostasy led to the restoration of the gospel. So believing that what Elder Talmage said is correct, think for just a second. When you're teaching the Spanish Armada, you have to ask, how did that lead to the restoration of the gospel? When you teach about Martin Luther, you have to ask, how did that lead to the restoration of the gospel? When you teach about Joan of Arc, what do you have to ask? How did that lead to the restoration of the gospel? So when you're teaching world history, are you viewing it in that context? What happened there? How did it lead to the restoration of the gospel? Any ideas? Well, you have to answer this question then. Did Joan win or lose? Eventually, her country won, which was France. So you teach your children, when you're teaching world history, you teach them as you always do. You teach them the facts, the information, the dates, the names, the wars, the battles. You teach them all of that. But you have to ask the question, what if? What if France had lost? Because remember, at the time, England was overpowering France. Or ask this, what if England had won? You're talking late 1420s. What if England had won? Now stop, and it takes a mindset here, an adjustment. So you have to ask two questions, what if? And you also have to ask, did something happen here that affected the restoration of the gospel? Anybody want to venture a guess and give me a bridge here? If France had lost, what? You want to go to that? If France had lost, then...
England would have been the same country.
Exactly. France and England, that looks like a Leona kid. If France had lost, France and England would be the same country. So, what if France and England are the same country? So what? Think now. Think. Answer the question, how does it lead to the restoration of the gospel?
The revolution.
Okay, jump ahead. You are the revolution, but jump a little bit ahead of that, or back. Come back a little bit. How the revolution? You're exactly right. But let's get rid of this guy here. Go away. Stop that. He doesn't like me. If I can find this here. Okay, we'll just walk you through quickly. What if France had lost the war? Who was it that financed the American Revolution? It was France. Who was it that supplied armies during the American Revolution when nobody else would? It was France. Who was it that had the greatest navy in the world except for England and that was our army or our navy in the American Revolution? It was France. Somebody had their hand up. Yes.
Well, and Henry VIII might not have been king if France and England had stayed together.
Would there have been a reformation? These are the things you need to look at. You need to look and see what if. Let me just run you through some screens here. Would it have made a difference? Absolutely it would have made a difference. At the final Battle of Yorktown, the French outnumbered the Americans 3-1. There were 30,000, I don't know if you're aware of this, and this is why you don't have to alter your teaching, you just kind of change your mindset. You ask this, would it have made a difference? What if? Yeah, at Yorktown, 31,000 French to 9,000 Americans. How could the colonists have financed the war against England? What if there was no France to loan money? France loaned the colonies $26 million. Who else loaned the colonies money? Nobody. Not in any substantial amount anyway. The Royal French Navy was our navy in the American Revolution. What if there is no France? What if France is part of England? France supplied America with guns and powder when no other countries would. What happens? So to answer the question now, what if France, what if Joan of Arc had not done what she did, and what if France had lost? Yes. I'd be Canadian. Don't do that. I love Canada. I love maple syrup. Leave me alone. Don't get me in trouble here, okay? All right. This is what we need to ask. Teach them the same facts. Teach them the names. Teach them the dates. But think what if, and then ask the question, how did it lead to the restoration of the gospel? Now, was Joan, can you prove to your students, your children, that it was providential that Joan won and that the French won? Oh, yeah. You have to know your history now, but you can find that. We'll go back here. Four different things that happened to Joan that maybe your children will say, okay, well, that was lucky, or the second one was lucky, but when you get to the third one, they're going, well, maybe something God did have something to do it. And by the time you get to the fourth one, yeah, they're going, okay, yeah, there was something there. For instance, when Joan is at the Battle of Tournai, when she is going up the ladder, there is a bolt, it's an arrow, from a crossbow that pierces the armor, it pierces the chainmail, it pierces the padding in between, and goes 6 inches into her... Put your finger right here between your neck and your collarbone. You feel that soft spot right there? 6 inches through there. 17-year-old girl. It's gone through all the armor. Now, some doctors got together a little while back and said, okay, what would have happened medically if this had happened? And this is what they said. Basically, it was going at the course or at the rate of 300 miles an hour. The average person getting this wound would hemorrhage within 2 to 4 minutes. Now, this was this big, massive French woman, right? All 5'2" of her, and probably about 110 pounds is what we know, at most. The arrow pierces her neck, basically. Does she hemorrhage? No. They pull her to the back lines. She's there for about 30 minutes. She pulls the arrow out herself. Yeah, watch the movie. It's kind of cool. And then they wrap her back up, and she's back to battle again. So your children can say, okay, well, that was lucky. It just happened to miss all of the arteries, right? Yeah, okay, here, let me stick a knife into your neck and see what I missed, but don't do it. That's an object lesson you don't want to try, okay? It's one of those things you want to do with your kids when they're not getting the lesson. Try this. Okay, the Battle of Jargeau. While scaling a ladder, a stone was hurled down that struck with such force that it shattered her steel helmet, and she fell head first, stunned to the ground. She's about 40 to 50 feet high. What would have happened? Doctors again. Well, like I said, they thought she was dead. But the doctors, again, they went through this whole thing, and they concluded really basically it should have crushed her skull. If it crushes the steel helmet, maybe it's going to hurt you. Then if you land on your head, maybe it breaks your neck. But it did nothing. Nothing. She gets back up, stunned a little bit, climbs back up the ladder. Second time, your children go, boy, she was really lucky on that one. So then you go to the third thing. In the attack on Paris, her thigh, upper thigh, was pierced. Now, I don't mean into the thigh, through the thigh, with this bolt going between 300 and 1,000 miles an hour, which, depending on how close she was, and it goes right through the thigh, upper thigh. It hurts. And if your 16-year-old boy doesn't believe it, that's the time to do an object lesson. What possible damage did these doctors come up with? They said her bone should have been shattered if it hit the bone. If it didn't hit the bone, it should have cut the nerve there, resulting in permanent paralysis of the leg, which it didn't do. If it didn't do that, it should have lacerated her artery and she should have bled to death. But she did none of the above. Oops, let me jump back. None of the above. All she did was wrap her leg up with a bandana and go back into the battle. So maybe at this point, your kids are kind of going, boy, That is one lucky 17-year-old girl. Or maybe at that point, if your children have been asked to think, what if? Or if you've taught them that all things after the apostasy lead to the restoration, then maybe, just maybe, in their minds, they're going, well, wait a minute. Maybe this has something to do, or Joan had something to do with the restoration of the gospel. Maybe she wasn't just lucky. Maybe she was protected. Maybe these voices were actually from God. Maybe he wanted her to live so that France could win, so that France could help the America. Because what happens if there's no France in the American Revolution? Let's face it, we didn't beat England, by the way. You do know that, don't you? We didn't beat England. We could have fought them until the year 2020 and never beaten them at that particular time and point in the world. It was not a war of revolution. It was a war of deliverance. That really is the only thing that way you can look at it. But the fact is that if England and France had been the same, could we have beaten them? We could barely beat England, which we didn't, but with help we were delivered. So then they start thinking in their mind, wait a minute. And so then you hit them with one more thing and say, okay, they captured Joan, and after they captured her, she was in a tower that was 60 to 80 feet high, and she jumps out. Problem is, she caught her foot when she was jumping out, and she landed on her head. Now, this is a 5'2", 110-pound girl that jumps from a 60 to 80-foot tower. She doesn't even have a helmet on this one. And all she does is knock herself out. Was she lucky? Was she fortuitous? What was she? The Spanish Armada. Were they lucky, the English? Were they fortuitous? What's the bridge? If not this, then would this have happened? If not this, would this have happened? If not this, would this have happened? Martin Luther, what time are we supposed to be done here?
10:45.
Okay, Martin Luther, I just want you to look at him for a second, again. Make history come alive for your sons and daughters. But don't make it come alive with names and dates and places. Make it come alive with understanding of why. You can give them a fish and teach them, this is what happened. Or you can teach them to fish and explain to them why it happened. All things testify of me, it tells us in the Pearl of Great Price. All things testify of him. So history testifies of him. How does Martin Luther testify? Pretty simple. How does Spanish Armada testify? Pretty simple. How does Joan of Arc testify? Simple. Teach your children the history. Give them names and dates and places. But then ask that one question, what if? So who can come up here and do the Martin Luther one for us again? Okay, Kathy, I'll have you come up in a second. Oh, I thought you saw your hand go up. This is the other reason why it's important to teach them the what if, and teach them the bridges. If God really did care enough in the Spanish Armada to defeat the most powerful navy in the world so that the principles of Puritanism could survive and be brought over, and I often wonder what it must have been like to have been the angels or God or whomever looking up and down at that little itty bitty boat with 104 people going across the ocean after that many years and knowing that that's where it was all really beginning as far as America. I wonder what it must have been like to look down at that little Mayflower. But there it was, and it carried those principles, and then when they got here, we know what happened. Maybe if God really did care enough that with Joan of Arc, he protected her. Why? What if? Now, what if? Well, all things lead to the restoration, so that France could win, so that America had somebody on her side. If you know American history, you know that almost at no other time in the history of the relation between America and France was there a good relationship, really, except for 1 6- or 7-year period. We were sure lucky, weren't we? Or you can say, that's right, we liked the French for 7 years, and they liked us for 7 years. After that, who knows what happened? But we sure were lucky. Or you can look at Martin Luther and say, he didn't recant even though he should have. As a 30-something-year-old young man, knowing he would be burned at the stake, but he would not, could not recant. Because of that, the Reformation carried on, and everywhere that goes. Why is that important to your children? Because they learn to see the hand of God in history. They learn to see it themselves. We talk about it all the time in the American Revolution. The fog, we talk about Trenton, we talk about Princeton, but you know what? There are so many more instances in world history. And why is that important? Because if God will intervene into the affairs of nations, if he will intervene into the affairs of great groups of people, then surely he will intervene into the life of a young man or woman today. They will make that connection. It's when I'm teaching my classes, it's the connection that we make when we talk about these things, about Joan of Arc, Spanish Armada, all the rest of the things we're talking about American history. And I tell them a story about a man that named Rickenbacker, World War I ace that became, he was in the military in World War II also. His plane went down. He was an observer. He was scouting over in the Pacific. His plane went down in the Pacific. He was there for 3 weeks in the ocean. Finally, his little raft comes in. He comes to, and he sees that he's coming up to a small island. But he can't break through the barrier, the waves. And he has no strength. He got really lucky. A couple of fish jumped into his boat, so he had something to eat. But he said in his own words that as he picked up this little makeshift oar that he had and he started to row, in his words, he said, there were other hands than mine that rowed that boat. Eddie Rickenbacker recognized the hand of God in his own life personally. Your sons and daughters must recognize the hand of God in their life. There are too many young men and women today that don't understand their importance. And they also don't understand this, that just as God put Joan of Arc here, Elizabeth, Martin Luther, George Washington, and all the rest of the great people in history, our Father in Heaven put your sons and daughters here at this time for a reason. You've heard the analogy. It's a little cheesy, but you've heard it. If you're in the last inning of a game, you're going to put your worst athletes in. The fact is, we are in the last inning, as we know it, of the history of this world. If you are our Father in Heaven, are you going to put your weakest souls here with all that they have to fight against? Absolutely not. These young men and women need to understand that God will intervene into their lives just like he did with Joan, just like he did with the Armada, just like he did with Martin Luther. He will step into their lives. I said to my classroom a couple months ago at the beginning of the year, we were looking at the greatest generation and how it's been, the World War II generation was called the greatest generation. And I said, how dare this generation, speaking of the kids now, how dare you guys think that you are the greatest generation? Because you know how they're always being told, you're the most special, you're the most important. And I laughed at them a little bit, and I said, get real. What have you done? Tweaking them a little bit, but a little bit serious. I said, look at my father's and your grandfather's generation and what they did in that war as they saved the world from Nazism. What have you done? And I laughed a little bit, but then I quit laughing right around the election. And now when I look at what this generation has to face, with the morals and values that are being challenged in America, with the economy as it stands, with the debt as it stands, with the socialism, what is happening to America, I look at this generation and I said, yes, you are right. Or at least you better be right. This had better be the greatest generation. And you had better know who you are. And you had better know that God will intervene in your life. Because if you do not stand up at the right time, what you were sent here to do, the next generation after you will not enjoy the liberties and freedoms that we enjoy now. We can make mistakes along the way, previous generations, and we have. If this generation, however, makes the same mistakes, it'll be a different world. My prayer is this, that you will teach your sons and daughters that God intervenes into the affairs of nations, that God intervenes into the affairs of peoples, that God intervenes into the lives of individuals just like them. But you have to show it to them. Eventually, they'll get it for themselves. I've got one last list I want to show you here. And my wife has promised me that she will print this up. Is that right, Colleen? If you're looking in world history, I call it history's 50s, and don't try to write this all down because I'll go through too fast. But these are the 50 that I hit when I'm talking about world history, where you can show a direct correlation between history and then the bridge that brings it to today, where you see God's hand and you answer the question, what if? And these. And we'll have it for you, I guess, at our booth or whenever tomorrow, probably. But yeah, you do have to learn it yourself. You do have to learn world history. But while you're learning it, don't forget to ask the question, what if? And put the bridge there and bring it to the restoration. How was it important to the restoration? And you will see it every single time. I'm supposed to take questions, but I'll do that afterwards. Let me just leave this with you. I leave you my testimony without a doubt. There is no question, there is no shadow of a glimmering of doubt in my mind that God steps in and directs the affairs of this world when necessary. We saw it at the beginning in the screens that I showed you. He reserves certain people for certain times to do certain things. These young men and women today have been reserved for now. Please teach them. Please teach them. Teach them to recognize God's hand in history so they will see it in their own lives. If you will do that, then they'll have a much better chance of accomplishing what they were sent here to do. And I leave that with you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Any questions? It's a little overwhelming, I realize, with all these history things, but yes. When I'm teaching, and I need to point something out here. Yes, the question is at Liahona, do I do that? Yes, I do it every single class I can when I'm teaching. But you don't need Liahona, and this may sound weird, but you don't need Liahona to do that. You can do it yourself. Take these 50, go to Gospel Link, get your information there. Well, you can get your information from any history book. Go to Gospel Link and look up and see what the general authorities have said about that very issue. When I looked up Joan of Arc, there were 1,400 different references to Joan of Arc. And then you can do it yourself. Yeah, I do it. That's what I do for a living, though. You can do it on your own. You don't need to have somebody walk you through. And it makes time sound like I'm trying to talk you out of something, but you can do it on your own. It takes more time, yes, but you can. Yes?
What is Gospel Link?
Gospel Link is gospellink.org, is that it, I believe? And that's basically an online site where you can go in, and it has BYU, it has Deseret Book, it has the church publications, all these different publications. I looked up George Washington. There were 14,000 references, talks, given by general authorities and other church people about Washington. So all this online material. And if you go monthly, I think it's like $4.95 a month is all. And it's well worth it, believe me. Okay. Yes? Okay, yeah. This is the question: is, do I have a list of resources? First of all, any history book will do just to get the basic facts, because you want to teach them the facts.
Beyond that, that's
where I go to Gospel Link. What I do is I get the basic facts, Joan of Arc, whatever it may be. Then I go, you take it from a gospel perspective, though, and that's what your platform has to be. Gospel, okay, here's the secular facts. Now, what led to this? And that one, honestly, you don't need any other resource except Gospel Link. I found at least. Kathy, what do you use?
Brent is being very modest, but he has written some amazing history books that do this that we can purchase.
Well,
he doesn't want to talk about today because he's teaching a class. Yeah.
Well, but there are, if you look at any, thank you, Kathy, but if you do any history book, they'll get the facts, though. Then you go to Gospel Link and see what the prophets have said. But then all it requires really is you to think and answer the question, what if? What if it hadn't happened, or what if it had? And then, how did it lead to the restoration? And you'll do it yourself. And I know that may sound simplistic, but that's the very way that I do it. Yes?
Is it an order or
Nope. When you're doing world history, it's a little easier for the kids to do it in order, but you don't really need to. For instance, what would have happened if the Saxons hadn't come? Look up the history, you'll see. Where did our law come from? And you can follow, what if Alfred the Great? It does take studying history, but boy, it leads. And it, honestly, and I don't mean to sound simplistic, but it is so simple to see the steps when you actually get the, if you're keeping in mind, what if it didn't happen? And if you're keeping in mind, how did it lead to the restoration? If you're keeping those two things in mind, then honestly, it falls into place. You know, one of the coolest things. At the beginning of every year when I teach, I tell the kids this, that I want them to get a testimony. It may sound strange in this context, but I want them to get a testimony of history. Because if you're getting a testimony of history, if it's taught in the right way, you're really getting a testimony of God's hand. And we had a young lady at graduation said that one of the most spiritual moments she'd had all year of our school graduation, one of the most spiritual moments we had all year was when she was sitting in history class and she realized that God was involved in every aspect of history. And so he did care about her, and he would be involved in her when she needed it. And she could have flunked every single test, as far as I'm concerned, paper test. But if she passed that test of realizing God's hand is there, that was the greatest thing she could have learned. Anything else? Yes. I will tell you this: that is one of the neatest things in the world. And my wife will tell you, I can't. How many times it happens? But when you're into history, and all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, and you make these connections, and you realize these people, it wasn't an accident. They were put here to do this, and they did it. It's not just a person in 600 years ago anymore. This is a person that God put here. And it is so neat. And Joan of Arc, 17-year-old girl, come on. Well, French, but, you know, other than that. But all right. If there's no other question, thank you very much for being here.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.